Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to Yarn and Circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National News Radio Service, and you can give us a call and add to the conversation on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, you can text my brother 0457-140-550. And otherwise, check us out on Facebook as well, BBM 987 FM. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land where we broadcast from and to all our traditional owners across the deadly country of ours. Welcome back to National Talk Black. Have you say, you mob, yarn up strong. Voice for our people. We go across the nation, like I said, thanks to NERS, and a big shout out to all our First Nation radio stations across the country. And like make mention of some of them, a very good morning, Yarraba. Always ears on when we got our daily programs happening here at the Bummer Bipper Media. Radio Hopewell, 107.7 FM. Noongar Radio Perth, Sherberg 4UM. Rockhampton 4US, Yularen radio station, Northern Territory. My 105 FM, big shout out to your mob. Tales of 4K1G. Too deadly, yarning up strong here on your daily program. Add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416.
Well, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah, and I'm biding my time. Give me three more, Mr. Whitty, cause you know I got a whole lot on my mind. I'm going back to Louisiana to that girl I left behind. Well, that kind of woman, just my size. She knocks me out the way she looked me in the eye. I'm going back to Louisiana to that girl I left behind. Well, I've been to Kansas City, been to Memphis too. I never met a woman that could love me like you do. Go back to Louisiana to that girl I left behind. I used to live in 3-4, but then she moved. I bet you 10-1 she's gone to Baton Rouge. Well, I'm gonna look her up if you know what I mean. But if I had to go as far as New Orleans,
too deadly, going back to Louisiana. That's Buddy Knox here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Yana with the ball here on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from the Aboriginal Torres Strait Radio Station here in Cairns. Give me a call, add to the conversation. The Murray Radio Station is BBM 98.7 FM, and we go via NERS, National News Radio Service, that deadly number 1-800-422-416. And like I said, you can text the brother as well, 045-714-0550. Going across the nation, thanks to Nurs. I got some yarns coming up your way. We're going to catch up with Jack Jans, deadly brother from Cape York, and he's going to add to the conversation regarding the RSL bands. Welcome to Country, Aboriginal flag at Anzac Day, Remembrance Day ceremonies in WA. So we're going to talk about that space, and you can add to the conversation, tell us your thoughts on that. Also going to talk to Edwin and Mimi. And Edwin Mimi is talking about the military career spanned 24 years, enlisting in 1985 at the age of 19 and retiring in 2008. So that's a deadly story. And talking about RSL, there's a soldier right there we're going to have a yarn to. And also going to catch up and have a yarn with Yolandi Inch. And that's a two stories Yolandi will discuss. A Cairns couple have created poetry workshops in the remote indigenous community of Dumiji. Hey, my people there, big shout out. In the Gulf of Carpentaria, and also two philanthropic minded women from Dumiji will attend the screening of a documentary in which they featured roles at a Los Angeles based indigenous film festival. So stay ready for that yarn as well. All right, we're going to catch up a yarn now, like I said, with brother Jack Jans. And let's talk about that space in regarding the RSL bands. So on the line, Jack, good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good morning, Uncle Trev. How's things?
All good, my brother, all good. Let the mob know who you mob, where you're from.
So Tepasiki and Chuganji from Western Cape up in Mapoon, and Wangi from the Gulf.
Wangi from the Gulf.
And living in Cairns these days.
Yes, too deadly, brother. Now, the RSL bands, welcome to country, Aboriginal flag at Anzac Day, Remembrance Day ceremonies in WA. A bit of a slap in the face, don't you think, for our mob?
Absolutely. I think it was a massive slap in the face. Glad, though, to hear, I think it was yesterday, they reversed their decision on the band.
Yep.
I mean, one of the main issues of it that struck me was the fact that they claim to be pro-inclusive. You can't be exclusionary in the name of inclusion. And however, they didn't, like as it's Australian and New Zealand Army Corps at Anzac events, obviously, commemorate. You've got... You can't necessarily dictate to New Zealand, the New Zealand delegates and from overseas what they do. So that's why the RSL in Western Australia didn't exclude the Maori rendition of their national anthem and of any prayers that any representatives in New Zealand would issue at any services. And I think that that was such a glaring, what would you say, difference between the way New Zealand, Maori and Pakeha culture have integrated and how in Australia we're still finding that even acknowledgement to country,
yes,
what somebody puts in their own speech is being excluded and banned. I know, I think that's just shocking.
Well, I've heard some elders say here in Cairns saying that lest we forget, unless you're black.
Yes, exactly.
Forget about you.
Well, that's right. I mean, the RSLs are a great place to get a feed, but, you know, historically they've not exactly been the most inclusive over time for Viet Vets, for Indigenous people, who, even if they were former service men and women, were not allowed in.
Mm.
So, you know, there's a lot of historic issues there with RSLs, so they haven't... And I think it's interesting that they've learned a lesson. I certainly would love to know what was going on in their board meetings in Western Australia to even bring them to this point.
So, and for our listeners to bring them in the picture, they're probably well aware because it went across mainstream media as well. The WA branch of RSL has banned the performance of Welcome to Country ceremonies and the flying of the Aboriginal flag at all its Anzac and Remembrance Day service. But they have now reneged on that and reversed that decision. And it did create an uproar and hence the reverse of the decision.
The problem is now whether they've reversed their decision or not, the fact remains that they made that decision.
So there you go, exactly.
The RSL West Australia have a huge PR nightmare ahead of them. I don't envy their position, but, I don't envy their ignorance either.
Well, when we're talking war, we're talking wounds, and they've actually opened up a womb by making that statement and now reversing it. Well, I know the womb's still open, so to speak.
Oh, that's right. I mean, and if we look at the RSL incident aside, the whole issue of acknowledgement to countries and welcome to country ceremonies at local councils, local council meetings and other types of meetings, that's been a contentious issue. We know that a welcome to country ceremonies can be expensive, and some charities and especially some organisations that do meet frequently probably can't afford to do that, but acknowledgement to country where at least the people who are gathered there, if there are no TO reps, they at least take the effort to acknowledge where they are and whose area that they're on.
Mm.
But it's this whole thing with this need to be inclusive via excluding. I mean, what does it take away having having that kind of ceremony, having that acknowledgement to country? Maybe a little bit of time, that's all. It doesn't take anything away, especially from events like Anzac Day and Remembrance Day. Not in my opinion, and certainly not in the opinion of some of the other West Australian RSL branches
who
came about and said they would continue to have include those against the rules of the statewide branch.
Well, exactly. But then we as First Nation people, a lot of our elders who did serve, I mean, back in the day, they were second-class citizen. They went over and fought for the country, and they were soldiers, arms in arms with their non-Indigenous soldiers. But when they came back, they went back to blackfellow. If you're black, stay back, not let in the pubs and celebrate, And so that opens up that soreness,
That's right, and even historically, back in especially World War One, people, Indigenous people who fought, they weren't citizens, didn't get the pension, and this is a big, even if we're looking outside of just the Indigenous affairs sort of scope of veteran issues, and especially of what's happened in Western Australia. I mean, overall, this country tends not to treat their war vets very well in general. The what's on offer, especially to address issues like post-traumatic stress disorder, and especially with pensions and all of that. There's a whole system that needs to be changed. There's a contempt there, definitely, in some areas of government towards former vets. Maybe it's I always said you can't wear the shame of bad decisions when it comes to conflict and lob that on the soldiers who really were not part of any decision making. Everyone looks back on war with regret, no matter what the purpose was or what the intent was going into it. So we're just looking. This is this is not just an Indigenous issue. This is vets and especially enlisted soldiers today should look at it going, if this is how they're going to continue to treat the memory of Indigenous soldiers, and of course the soldiers serving now and the soldiers still get to come here Indigenous, they don't really treat vets in general very well. I think it's a time to show solidarity between Indigenous and non-Indigenous servicemen and women.
Exactly. Point taken. And look, so they got a lot of flack, and they reversed the decision, and they wouldn't got the flack if they would have made the decision. Well, if they made the decision in the first place, So they left egg on their face, so to speak, haven't they?
Yes. Sorry.
They left egg on their face, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, why they even went down that road in the first place, I don't understand. I don't know what they were hoping to achieve, and like I said, it just goes to show the disparity there is between how Australia views their Indigenous servicemen and women and how the New Zealanders do.
Mm.
So the integration of Māori culture in the New Zealand side of their ceremonies, and are very open, very honest about it. And then,
inclusive.
How embarrassing to our New Zealand neighbours.
Exactly. True. My brother, thank you very much for sharing. Thanks for your opinion. I think you have got an opinion that is strong by a lot of First Nation people and a lot of our non-Indigenous brothers and sisters as well, thinking that was a slap in the face. But look, the decision has been reversed, and so it should have. And now we move on here, but it just leaves that bad taste in your mouth, doesn't it?
I think it certainly does, but we move on now and to the next issue that we're going to face.
There you go, Jack. I heard that, my brother. You take care. All the best to you, bro.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Beautiful yarn there with Jack Jans and Yarn Up Strong there from the Cape, and giving his opinion regarding the RSL band's Welcome to Country Aboriginal Flag at Anzac Day Remembrance Day ceremonies in WA. But they did reverse their decision, and that's no longer. So add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. We are yarning up strong here on National Talk Black. We're going across the nation thanks to NERS, housed at the Aboriginal Torres Strait Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumabrit Media, 98.7 FM. All right, speaking of the RSL, we're now going to catch up a yarn now with Edwin Mimi. Edwin's military career spanned 24 years, enlisting in 1985 at the age of 19 and retired 2008. During the time he worked his way up to a warrant officer class two, that is, in the Royal Australian Infantry Corps, and got him on the line there. Edwin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Not too bad.
Thank you for coming to the program, my friend. Before we start, let the mob know who your mob, where you from.
I'm a Waka Waka boy from Gander in the Wide Bay area there.
All right, fantastic. So, look, we just talked about WA and their decision banning the Welcome to Country Aboriginal flag at Anzac and Remembrance Day and ceremonies in WA, but have reversed their decision. I mean, you as a First Nation man and a soldier at that, that's got to leave a bad taste in your mouth.
Oh, most definitely, yeah, considering that when you have a look at it, the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people have always been representatives in defending the country.
Yes.
Going all the way back to the Boer War.
Mm, exactly.
And up to now the current conflicts that are happening right now.
Yes. So, look, that's a conversation left a bad taste in the mouth, but moving on to your deadly career, my brother, mateship beyond the service. So tell us about your 24 years, served at the age of 19 back in 1985 and just retired 2008. So tell us about your journey there, please.
Yeah, it was mainly a decision because I'm coming up from a country town called Gander and looked like there wasn't much opportunities out there, so and I had a great role model, which was my uncle, who was a Vietnam veteran.
Yes.
So he actually directed me.
And what's your uncle's name? Let's give him a plug there.
Yeah, Harry Highmind. Unfortunately, he's passed on now.
With us in spirit, yes.
Due to some of the things that occurred over in Vietnam, mainly with the Agent Orange. But he was a good role model, and that's one of the things I always believe in. If you've got good role models in your communities, it helps a long way.
It does.
Especially young people making the right decisions.
And you're living proof of that, exactly. Thank you.
And, yes, I've decided to join 1985. Look, it's very... The things were still pretty hard, I would say, back then, especially being the only dark fella in the team that I was in. So.
And being the only dark fella there in the team, how were you treated?
Oh, no, overall it was pretty good.
Good.
But you always say there will always be elements. There's always little comments that come out that always have a go. You always have a go.
Sure.
Get under your skin. But I was kind of brought up with the same thing. Okay, you're thick skinned, get on with it, and let's make the best of it.
Yep.
So, yeah. I finished that time. Actually, when I left recruits, I went to the infantry centre, which is in Singleton. Then got allocated the 1st Battalion up in Townsville. And then that, luckily enough for me, that battalion was the same battalion that my uncle served in when he went to Vietnam in 1965-66.
Okay. So did you do any service overseas?
Yeah, because I wanted the older crew, I was... 1993, we went as a battalion group, went to Somalia.
Mm-hmm.
1999, Timor, then back in Timor in 2003, and my last deployment was 2004-2005 in Iraq.
Yes.
So I was able to get a good mixture of deployments as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a bit of experience that you picked up. So as through my career, I went to a number of training establishments, so giving those lessons that I've learnt on to the younger generation that were coming through, and possibly some of those would turn out to be the leaders within the army.
Yeah, fantastic. So a passion for teaching, I'm reading here. Tell us about that.
Because you go into those training establishments and it's good to pass on that knowledge because, again, that's probably coming a bit from where a lot of our lot are starting to, I would say, we lost it a while. We're learning from our elders again.
Mm.
And that goes, especially, I would say, from my personal experience, we're starting to learn those stories again from our elders so we knew what had occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that need to be passed on. And so, yeah, in that context, as a instructor, it was good passing on what I knew in my job to the future ones coming through so they were able to do their job correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And if they deployed, made sure they will be able to come back home safely.
Fantastic. Now, as a black fella, like most black fellas, love sport. There was a role of sport in the infantry as well. Tell us about that, brother.
Yeah, if you didn't, I had a saying from an old Vietnam warrant officer.
Hmm.
He would always say, "I don't trust anybody who doesn't play rugby." So but being a Queensland country boy, played rugby league.
Yep.
But then when you joined the army, you had to
play union.
So
that's right.
I adapted to that, and it was good because, especially in Townsville at the time, there were two infantry battalions, and we would always, sporting arena was, that was the rivalry all the way through.
Yes.
And that develops, and then your mateships and all that come through.
Exactly. Did you have any officers play in the game as well?
Yeah, a heap of them. So it was...
That'd be a good way to get back at the officers. Smash them, sell them a dump.
you try every now and then, but at the end of the day, you come out, finish the game, you shake hands.
Beautiful.
And then you move on.
Too deadly, brother. So, look, a fantastic career. So, so what are you doing after retirement from the Defence Force?
Oh, I did 2 years at Armed Reserve where I was helping the Defence Force develop Indigenous programs for them. So
good.
The main idea was just to bring kids from the remote regions.
Yes.
And give them an idea about what the Defence Force was like. It wasn't a recruitment drive or anything like that. It was just to give them options and what they wanted to do.
Sure, give them a taste of it as well. But the Defence Force also was, always good in disciplinary reasons, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of our kids are losing that. Don't worry about that, brother.
Yeah, it was good to get the kids really to know what it was about and get them in a routine. And a lot of the remote community, you're looking at, first one was for kids in remote New South Wales. So you're looking at Bourke, Walgett, Coonamble, all those places, Dubbo. Mm. Then the second one was for kids in remote South Australia, St. Gina, and around those regions. So it was good for me too to understand where a lot of these kids came from too.
Yes,
and understand
exactly.
What the situations were. I'll just mention one of the kids that we had, and this comes back to the information getting out to the communities and all that.
Mm.
So one of the young fellas actually pulled off the course that we had down in Dubbo, but he wanted to come back on about 3-4 months after it, and we finished. And I was based up here in Brisbane. They got in contact with me and they wanted me to go down and see him. So I actually, from Brisbane, I drove down to Walgett to meet him just to see what he wanted to do. And the program was in line, in partnership with New South Wales Police at the time. So I met up with one of the police that we were working with.
Mm.
We went out to his place. His uncle was the one who got in contact with us. Went there and his uncle was pointed out, and this young fella, name of Dougie, was living in a caravan at the back of the yard.
Hmm.
And myself and the Bo, who was the police officer at the time, went walking around, and Dougie's little cousin, must have been about only 3, 4 or something like that, went running into the caravan, and all you could hear him say was, Dougie, there's 2 people to see him. One fellow's one's Bo the copper, and the other fellow's an army fellow in uniform, and he's black. So, and just understand that
sure.
They don't get that message.
Exactly.
That they're
a black man in uniform.
it can be a good thing sometimes.
Exactly. Now that's right. You know, fantastic.
So the opportunities are there of understanding. Okay, there's a career path depending which way you want to go.
Exactly. Fantastic. Well, look, a beautiful story, and look, fantastic, and congratulations on your 24 years in the Defence Force, and representing your mob and your people, you know, and a fantastic career, and you swear by that.
Yeah, and it helps me a lot because currently I'm doing a cultural heritage field supervisor on a project just near Townsville, so
good.
It's good getting to have a talk to elders from the other mobs that are around the place.
Yes.
And sometimes there's that connection there too, family-wise, when you start talking to them.
Find the connection. Exactly. Beautiful. Too Deadly, everyone, thank you very much for sharing, my brother, and big shout-out to all your mob, and look, congratulations, 24 years, very impressive, and still doing work using those schools and working with the young ones, and I think it's fantastic. All the best to you, Edwin. Thank you for the yarn, Cuss.
No, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Too Deadly. You take care, my brother.
You too.
Bye-bye. There is a beautiful yarn there. Edwin James Mimi, his name is. And, 24 years, served in the Army, enlisted back in 1985, at the age of 19, but retired in 2008. And now he's still using those schools and working with young one there, a young Indigenous brothers and sisters, and helped them get on the right track. So, look, a fantastic conversation there. You mob can add to the conversation. 1-800-422-416 is the number for your daily program, National Talk Black, and your yarn with the Baldy One. Your host, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, and live here at the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National News Radio Service. Have your say, mob, Too Deadly.
Gives light to all mankind.
Shine.
The sun shines on the land and the sea. The sun shines on you and me. God has given us the gift of life. The sun has given us equality. This is the lore of the land. Do you know what I mean? You sabe. Do you know what I mean?
Surely as the earth has given us life, it shall also take away.
Some people give, some people take. Some of them love and some of them hate.
You gotta give a little, gotta take a little, gotta be a little more kinder.
This is the law of the land. Do you know what I mean? You sabe.
Sabe.
Do you know what I let me elaborate a little? Gotta tell you a little more about it. When the rain falls on the mountain, the river flows to the sea. Just as fate has brought you to me.
Alamo,
Alamo,
Yatelafa,
Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
Yeah, JH, Jared Harbrow, Two Daily Brother, Gold Coast Suns, here on your daily program is the Bally One, as he alluded to. Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. Add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, text the brother, 045-714-0550. Jan Upstrong here on National Talk Black, live from the Aboriginal Torres Strait Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM, Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And via NERS, National News Radio Service. Now, I'm going to catch up with Jan now with Yolande Inch. Two stories Yolande will discuss. A Cairns couple have created pottery workshops, in the remote indigenous community of Dumiji. My countrymen up there, big shout out, in the Gulf of Carpentaria. And also two philanthropic-minded women from Dumiji will attend the screening of a documentary in which they play feature roles at a Los Angeles-based indigenous film festival. So on the line, we have Yolande. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Great, Trevor. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. How deadly for you to work in this space with our mob? Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, it's very exciting to work in this space. Yeah.
So tell us about Cairns couple who created pottery workshops in remote indigenous community of Dumiji.
So in 2018, I was working up in Dumiji running an empowering women program, and the ladies were really keen to give pottery a try. So I got a very dear friend of mine, Felicity from Kettle Black Pottery, to come up for the week. In 4.5 days, the community made over 120 pieces, and we had over 100 members of Dumiji come through the pottery studio. We had grandmothers with their grannies. We had young men, young women. We had one lady who sadly has mental health issues, yeah, and she came for 3 days straight. Very tactile.
Fantastic. Yeah. So where'd you get all the clay from for beginning?
So we order it through the clay shed and then ship it up to Dumiji, and because they're in plastic bags, they're right to sit for a while. Yeah. Good.
Fantastic. So it created a space where all hands-on on deck, and soothing, good yarns and beautiful pottery. I mean, a beautiful space.
Trevor, it brings people together, and that's what I love. It brings all of the community together, and it's an activity that you can do regardless of your age or your ability in pottery. I don't have any pottery skills, and whenever I go up to Dumiji and the potter's there, I'll paint a goanna, I'll make a goanna, I'll make a mug, or I'll make a bowl. And I have to tell you, it's so rewarding.
Good
to
on
have
you.
A look at something you've created.
Yeah, fantastic. So for you, Yolande, tell us the picture and how, well, you got involved in this and working with our people, and then way far north in the Gulf there, and in my countryman, Dumiji Township. And how did this all come about for you?
I'm very, very blessed. In 2017, I was invited to go up to Dumiji and talk to the ladies that were participating in the community development program. Mm. And the ladies were sadly coming to work every day and with nothing to do. In the room, there was old dried paint, there were scraps of fabric, there were some sewing machines, but it would appear that nobody had sat down and had a conversation with those beautiful women and said to them, you know, you come to work every day, what is it that would inspire you? What is it that you'd like to be doing? And that's the conversation that I had. I then fed that back to the service provider, and they invited me back to start rolling out a program for the ladies, which is the Empowering Women's Program. And I have to say, by the end of 2018, that room looked 1,000 times different. There was so much activity going on, so many women engaged. I would run activities in the afternoons for younger women, because anybody who works in community, and particularly in Dumiji, a lot of the young ones will be, and look, I've got a 13-year-old daughter, so they're all the same.
Yes.
They prefer to sleep to lunchtime if they can get away with it.
Black or white, yes.
Black or white, yep. So you know, I did think, well, why are we trying to get young people here at 8 o'clock in the morning when I know how hard it is to get my daughter out of bed to go to school? So we ran some activities in the afternoon, and, you know, at 5 o'clock, I would have to say to some of these young women, okay, girls, it's time to, you know, shut up shop, but come back tomorrow, and they would.
Chuck a tantrum, and they would.
Yes, they
That's
would.
The idea.
And, you know, and they're very shy. You know,
of course,
the other
yeah.
thing that we do a little bit differently is we engage in the community. And in Doomadgee, they Elijah Douglas, he runs dance, and he's trying to get the young kids engaged in culture through dance.
Yes.
And he'll do that on a Wednesday afternoon. So my team and I, we'll always head down there and we'll help cook or shake a leg, which makes everybody belly laugh because
yes.
apparently I can't dance.
Good on you for trying. Shaking booty, beautiful. Tell us the story about the two philanthropic minded women from Doomadgee who attended the screening of a documentary, which they played feature roles at Los Angeles based Indigenous Film Festival. Tell us about that, please.
Oh, Trevor, this is an incredible story of a group of Doomadgee women who were determined to help their sisters in Papua New Guinea who are less fortunate than themselves. So I also do work in the treaty villages of Papua New Guinea, and one of my philanthropic projects...
How big is your heart, my sister?
It's the Moonsick Care Bag project,
yes.
where we make washable sanitary pads for ladies, and we put them in a bright, colourful bag, and it includes two pairs of good quality underwear, a bar of soap, a face washer, and a couple
yes.
of other things. To date, we've sent over 1,800 bags
Whoa.
Into the treaty villages.
Mm.
Anyway, I was telling the ladies in Doomadgee about the struggles that the women in Papua New Guinea have, including no access to shops, no bathrooms, no toilets, no doctors, no hospitals. And I was watching the ladies in Doomadgee, and you could see them thinking, gosh, we have all those things
sure.
here in Australia. How
a story like the man who complained he had no shoes till he met a man who had no feet.
Correct. Yes. Yes. And so at the end of the presentation, the ladies said to me, Yolanda, is there some way that we could volunteer? Is there some way we could make bags?
Mm-hmm.
And for them to go over to Papua New Guinea.
Lovely.
And my heart just swelled.
Yes.
And I was so proud of the ladies.
Good,
but to
yes.
cut a long story short, they did. They agreed to make 250 bags. They ended up making 330.
Mm.
Veronica said to me, Yolanda, is there any chance that a couple of the ladies could go with you the next time you're travelling to the treaty villages so that
yeah.
we can personally hand out these bags?
Wow, goosebumps here.
Yeah, and I said, leave it with me. I like a challenge. And, yes, we were able to raise the funds, and I contributed personally as well.
Yeah.
And we got the ladies across. They got a passport each, Anthea and Veronica, and off we went. But at the time, I thought this story is too good a story not to share more broadly. So I went back to the service provider and asked them first if they were interested in funding a documentary before I actually went further afield, which they were, and I was thrilled about that. So, yes, we took a film crew with us, and the film crew actually travelled to Doomadgee as well. We captured that story in a 6-minute documentary that I understand is still being screened on SBS On Demand and NITV. It's called A Woman's Calling. A Woman's Calling. So the filmmaker then submitted our documentary to a number of national and international film festivals that have awards attached to them. So since October, I'm proud to say it is a national and international multi-award winning
Whoa.
Documentary, and it will give you goosebumps.
It all starts with an idea, doesn't it?
It certainly does, Trevor. And so then the ladies, Veronica and Anthea, said to me, okay, Yolanda, we really want to go to a film festival if we can. And so we looked at the list of festivals coming up this year, and we were looking at Melbourne or Sydney, and I saw this one in LA that is called Through My Eyes, and it's for Indigenous projects globally. Mm. And I thought, how amazing would that be for the ladies to go and, you know, sort of sit and meet other Indigenous actors and filmmakers and see other Indigenous stories from around the world. Mm. And so within about 10 days, I reached far and wide into my network of contacts and have been able to raise all of the money and airfares that I've needed to be able to take Veronica and Anthea on the 18th of March so that they can sit in Art Space in Los Angeles, downtown Whoa. Los Angeles, and watch their documentary.
Too deadly. And you speak with so much love in your heart. Quickly tell us your story and your engagement with First Nation people. Where did you grow up, Yolande?
Believe it or not, I was born in Melbourne, grew up in Adelaide, travelled up to Cairns in early 1990s and started working with the Honourable Warren Inch, who mm-hmm. is also my husband now,
yes,
but he
yes.
wasn't at the time.
He scored and well.
Many people say he's we're punching above his weight, but anyway... when I was in that role, I had the pleasure of travelling right through Cape York and into the Torres Strait and, you know, made many wonderful relationships yes. with some of the traditional owners. Apparently, many of them wanted to swap me for mm. bulls because Warren does have cattle property.
Yes.
They would say to Warren, leave her here and we'll give you a couple of clean skin bulls.
That's blackfella trade right there.
But it's about the relationships, Trevor, and yeah. I have to say to you that I only see another person. I don't see colour.
Exactly, beautiful. And, yeah. you know, and at the beginning, honestly, you would look at your action as a wife to a politician. This is campaign stuff, you know. But here mm. you are working in a space, passionate about a space and making things happen. So we're loving mm. your work.
Thank you. And I will say, because there are people that do say that. I work inside and outside of Warren's electorate, but his plan is to retire. So, you know, there is mm. no campaigning. It's
exactly.
just my passion. You know, I love the ladies that I work with. I love the Dumiji community. I think there's a lot of potential up there that's untapped.
Sure.
There's a lot of creative people up there that at this stage, you know, I'd like to see more outlets mm. for creative arts.
Well, you're a good spirit, and our mob are in touch with our spirits. And when we're making yarn with people, we can know that their good spirit is at the table, and your good spirit
Thank
is
you.
At the table, and that's why things are happening. Always good talking with you, my sister. Thank you very much. Big shout out to all the mob there with Dumiji, and it's all my countrymen. And look, fantastic work that they're doing. And whatever tool we use, whether it be pottery or film, let's make it happen.
I absolutely agree. Thank you so much.
All the best, you doll. You take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Beautiful yarn there. Yes, Yolande Inch. She's a woman in her own right, but she is the wife of MP, Member of Parliament, for the seat of Leichhardt. That's Warren Inch, but doing a lot of work with our beautiful women in and on country, and passionate about what she does, and look, opening up doors and inspiring our beautiful women. Fantastic that they're helping our sisters over our neighbours, our sisters across the way, over in PNG, and also now going to Los Angeles for a Basin Indigenous Film Festival. So fantastic yarn up strong here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Add to the conversation, got about 11 minutes left, 1-800-422-416. Going to catch up with someone online. Someone, good morning.
Good morning, brother. Yeah, brother, you have two stories there. McCall about RSL and WA, and the second broke about, he served in the army, did he, brother?
Oh, yeah, Edwin Mimi. Yeah, Edwin Mimi. Yes, he did.
You know, as well as fighting for this country, India was in that war too. The rifle, as I brother, fighting for the empire, for the British Empire, brother.
Yes.
Yeah. So, where I'm going with this, I'm going to try and make a point, brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the book, John Bottom, John Bottom's Timothy Bottoms, conspiracy of silence and undercover as a rainforest method. But of course, we know from Uncle Goody we do Skull Creek. And there were the killing fields. I like to call them killing fields. And the Aberdeen Reserve is another name for a detention center. And there were a lot of people that were sent to different reserves, as well as Palmer and up from the table and two brother. You know, Cubby Station, Sydney Kidman and Gina Reinhardt, and as well the wife, the pastoralists and the agriculturalists down in New South Wales and in Queensland, like with Adani going up and back in New South Wales. And you know what sort of pissed me off yesterday, brother, was Brian Collins' yarn about the dog, you know. He's an analogy. People arguing over land like two ticks on a dog. What I want to close, can we talk about closing with that attitudinally, brother? I mean, I thought it trivialized black folks fighting for their land like two ticks on a dog fighting with the white folks. But I wanted to put it in a different perspective. I wanted to put it in the British Empire fighting for this land, white Australians going out here fighting for this land, and white Australian agriculturists and pastoralists in Queensland and New South Wales fighting the big mining company or the big end of town fighting for the land. It's more than just the land, brother. And the way I feel, brother, like, you get a bummer from Yilanji country and Kalawa mob or the Mitmara mob or the Noongar mob to swap land. It's not the same thing. It's very different. It's very different to our people. It's not just land. And the analogy, like the dog was land, like two ticks on a dog. Ticks on a dog with ticks with a people was a different source of ticks. You know, there are two sorts of ticks on dogs, and they are different sorts of dog. And in reference to dogs, they're a different source of land, brother. There's pine gap as well, and you know, they are land that. I reckon Gough-Whitlam got the sack over that land, and I reckon that's why after old man Migliari got that land, that's when Whitlam got the sack, because there didn't want any more black on the land. And to me, I reckon, but I haven't really heard about that, what Brian Collins said, like two ticks fighting over a dog.
A bad analogy, you're saying.
Yes, just fight for our land. But, you know, I watch Marcia Langton. She's a very cluey lady. And she talked about the nigger, and she said, up in Queensland. And like I say, some of those people from the table, and Brown spent 150 years there in family, and 150 years just for nothing. That land meant something for him. And it's just like two ticks on a dog, and some of those people got sent to Palm. Skull Creek, your uncle, good, brother. And I just mean, I want to close the gap, and if I can, and put it in the sense like when the British Empire fought for this land, or put it in the sense that Queensland pastoralists and agriculturists and New South Wales, and what the big end of town are doing for the Murray Darling, you know, brother, they're coming out the Chinese mob, what they do. And even Pauline Anson said, oh, you know, we don't want to be swamped by Asian and by Muslim, because land meant a lot to them. And a lot of our people died, you know, for our land. A lot of people were sent to take off the killing fields and sent on to reserve and another reserve. A name for reserve is detention center. But thank you very much, brother, for letting me come on, brother. Thank you very much, brother.
Thank you. Thank you, someone. Regular caller here on your daily program, National Talk Black. It's come to the time where Murray got to sign off to your mob, but look, this daily program is a one-hour program. We come to you live from the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbaribrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and the name of the program is National Talk Black. So it's the voice for our people, a good yarning circle, and we talk about all topics, and anyone's welcome to come in, but also give us a call on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. But you have to call that number tomorrow because Murray about to sign off here. Otherwise, go to 24-hour text 045-714-0550. But the Murray won't be answering the text 3 o'clock in the morning. I'll probably answer it the next morning. And but send in the text. Otherwise, check it out on Facebook as well. And you can see all our deadly stories, not only for this program, but all the stuff we do here at the Murray Radio Station here in Cairns. And that's BBM 987 FM. Check it out on Facebook. Thank you, Mob, for your company. Look, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. Got the news coming up here soon via National Indigenous Radio Service. So too deadly and nice sharing with you. And we'll talk soon, you Mob.
Getting stronger.